Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, episode 21, a BMW and Mini special edition on Wednesday, the 27th of January, 2016. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew.
Yeah, as I say, a special edition. It's a little bit like the Motoring Podcast, but we've sprayed it a metallic color, shoved in a cheap sunroof, and put some nice alloy wheels on it. Or something like that. That's belittling, terribly belittling what we've done. Actually,
hopefully taking it back to when special editions were special.
Quite. So, oh god, let's move on quickly.
So, what is the idea behind this BMW Mini special, Alan?
Well, the whole idea is that BMW Mini very kindly invited us down to their new headquarters at Fleet in Hampshire last week, where we got a great opportunity to drive a whole bunch of their newest models and a couple of forthcoming models, really, and hear a little bit more about some of them as well as getting that hands-on time. So we grasped it by the steering wheel and got on with it.
So nice cliches.
I'm just trying to well, I spent the whole day desperately trying not to think in terms of Troy Queef on the way through. Well, it's gripping the road like a champion.
I know, there were certain cars I was driving, I was thinking, I can't say that, that's so cliched.
Too right. So what we're going to do in this, talk a little bit about some of the cars we drove, talk about some of the other announcements that BMW had, and then round off by finishing off with some more of the cars we drove. So should we get started with, I don't know, it seems a little bit of a shame to get started with one of the highlights of the day right at the beginning. All I'm going to say is i8.
Oh, what a car.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
It was amazing.
Yeah, I really loved it. My those of you that follow me on Twitter or that know me in person know that I have a real thing about cars that are a bit different and a bit futuristic. And the i8 ticks every single box for me. I just absolutely loved it. I mean, the specs kind of, if you put it all together, you know, it's got the 1.5 liter 3-cylinder engine at the back. It's got 130 brake horsepower electric motor driving the front wheels, which I hadn't realized until last week, is that it was actually essentially 4-wheel drive. Not 16.4 seconds, whilst getting 134.5 miles per gallon and emitting only 49 grams per kilometer of CO2. From an engineering point of view, just amazing.
Yeah, the technology and the engineering that went into it, I was blown away. It was such a special experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole experience of from walking up to the car, because I had it in that fantastic blue.
Yeah,
from walking up to the car to getting in to then driving off and getting to experience exactly what it does and the various modes it can drive in and everything. And we had some nice roads where there was a few nice sweeping corners, and we went through some urban areas, and then there was a short bit of straight that you could put your foot down if the traffic was clear.
Yeah.
Not in dangerous speeds, but just, you know, just to get a feel, an impression of what the performance was like. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful. Really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, do you know what it felt like to me? And this, and I mean this as the hugest compliment ever, despite the fact that everybody's heard my thoughts on it. It felt like my RX-8 did. It had that same specialness, that same smoothness, both on the road when you're actually driving it. Just, you know, it was always controlled, but it wasn't harsh or firm. But it had that. It was even smoother than the RX-8, of course. Whilst missing out on all the issues of the RX-8. It had the same sort of nod to practicality with some rear seats and stuff. I loved it. If I had a spare 105 grand sitting around, I would be putting my name down and getting in the queue. I mean, I loved the i3, which I'd driven before, but the i8 was really cool.
Yeah, it's definitely, if you have an ego that needs to be stroked by people looking at you, definitely one of the cars for you. got as you drove it along, it did get a lot of glances and double takes.
Yeah, you've never been the Veracross. I didn't notice it as much, but yeah, it's
People let me out in it.
I know. Well, that's the thing. Everybody's
I drove other models in that day, and they didn't let me out. But in that, people stopped and went, "No, go on. You can go out in front of me. It's all right. I'd like to have a look at this."
I'm glad you got that. I got someone almost run into me.
Oh, it must have been hard to see the blue sports car with the lights on and everything.
The large, bright blue sports car with the LED lights and all these things. So, yeah. So I think it's pretty fair to say that our thoughts about the i8 were pretty positive, just generally. Liked it a lot.
Yeah, I love the way you got in. What were those doors? What is the technical term?
Oh, dihedral.
Dihedral, right.
Dihedral. Yes, they're not gullwing. They're dihedral, like a Toyota Sierra or a McLaren F1.
That's a wonderful bit of theatre just to get in. Okay, your dignity has to get put to one side slightly. But the theatre of the door opening and climbing in and out it helped to make the experience and the feeling of it even more special.
Yeah,
than you thought it was going to be.
Yeah, yeah. It absolutely reinforced that, yeah.
And it had head-up display.
Yes.
This
was a revelation. We might as well just talk about it now, to be honest. But the whole head-up display thing was a bit of a revelation to you, wasn't it?
I had strongly believed that head-up display was the future as far as safety in car for information to the driver. Mm-hmm. Now I have driven with head-up display. It absolutely is, and I won't hear anyone else say anything to me again because they are talking nonsense.
Yeah,
I hardly looked at the other displays, which were beautiful in there. Even the one that was showing me how much of the electric engine I was using and how much of the combustion engine I was using, which was fascinating at times. Mm-hmm. But I was just... I didn't have to take my eyes off the road. The sat-nav was great, and the directions you were given and how they were delivered was wonderful. That was really, really good in-car sat-nav. You're not going to agree with that?
No, I find BMW sat-navs very odd. It's different from what I'm used to. That's all. There's nothing wrong with BMW sat-nav. My dad loves his, but I always find the directions a bit different from what I'm used to. Sorry. I'll stop now.
No, it's cool, because I like the way that it said... at one point, get ready for a turn, because there was a slightly little tricky bit where you had to turn, and then you're at another junction almost immediate and stuff like that. And I liked that, because normally if I drive with the sat-nav, I have the sound off and I'm just looking at where the arrows are going. So I thought that the voice directions were very good. But I didn't pay attention to it, really, because the head-up display showed me where I needed to go next. And it also showed me what the maximum speed limit was on the road and what speed I was doing. And that is all I needed to know.
Yeah, I love the head-up displays. I think they are, as you say, I'm completely in agreement on a safety point of view. I think they're really excellent. I've said before, it's one of the things my father is a serial BMW buyer, which had no relevance to us being on the day, but he always specs a head-up display.
Yeah.
For exactly that reason, especially as you get older and it takes a little bit longer for your focus to change between instruments and road, he sees it as a fantastic safety device.
There was one thing I did want to talk about. I was very surprised on how spacious, light and airy the cabin was. I anticipated there being minimal visibility, particularly at the back, but I thought the visibility was great in it. And okay, the interior materials were light, so that helped, but it didn't feel claustrophobic.
No.
In any way. So if you are in the market for a £100,000 hybrid sports car, definitely go and have a go.
Yeah, absolutely.
But moving on, sorry, Alan.
Yes. Shall we come back? Shall we come back a little bit closer to the ground?
Yes.
And you drove the new Mini Clubman Cooper D, didn't you?
I did. This was the first Mini that I drove of the day. It was actually the first car I drove of the day. This is the Cooper Clubman D, which has 140-odd brake horsepower, if I am correct on that, I think. And I didn't drive the last version, because this is the new one that's only been out 6 weeks, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Something a ridiculously short time. And I thought this was such a... The main feeling I got, I thought it was such a mature drive. You could... It gripped the road really well, as one would expect with a wheel at each corner. It's slightly longer than the old one, slightly wider. And having owned a Mark 1 Mini 1, this was a step up. This was, you know, you've got a bit older. You now have a kid or two. It was much, you know, it's grown with you, I think is the way, best way to put it. And I felt that it was so nice inside. That it's a genuine contender now as a family car, whereas the last one had the side door that wasn't well received when it first came here.
It was on the driver's side for a start, so it opened out into the road, which was my reason for disliking it at the time. Always felt that was slightly arrogant, only ever engineering a car with a very British badge for left-hand drive. But it's worth saying at this point, everybody's going, gosh, the Clubman's really big. And that's not an accident. You know, from the chats that we were having with the folks from Mini, that's really intentional. This isn't meant to be, trying to think what size a car now. This isn't meant to be a Corsa competitor or a Mareva competitor or anything like that. This is aimed fairly and squarely at the Focus estate type
it's
size.
Type C, isn't it? I think that's segment.
C segment. So it's that. It's an upmarket version of that. You know, so it's meant instead of a Golf estate. It's meant instead of any of those things. A sort of upmarket equivalent to maybe some of the cars that you see going around the place with facilities management liveries down the side. It's that kind of size, and it's meant to be that kind of size. And I really liked that there were some. I didn't drive it, but I had a fair old poke around the one that was inside. And as I say, I got a tour from the product manager, just showing me some of the clever little bits in there. They've really thought about the details. Say what you want about the looks and that it being a bit derivative and a bit bloated. Inside is where it matters on that car.
Yes,
and. Just the little things like, you know, you can make the rear seats completely vertical so that if you've got a box that's just that bit too big, it'll fit in and it's 90, you know, you wouldn't want to sit in the back seat for a long time. But if you've got a shortish trip back from Wicks, for example, then you can put stuff in there and you can sit a bit less comfortably in the back for a while until you get home and then take that out. There's loads of compartments in the boot with space underneath.
Oh, I thought the boot was brilliant. I thought that was really well designed.
Yeah, yeah,
the nice. Little catches to hold the hidden area.
Yeah,
the lid to the hidden area. I thought the way that split as well, that you could just lift the front of the lip and just chuck something in and shut it down again. You didn't have to lift the whole thing. Mm-hmm. That's not a major thing, but someone has clearly thought about it.
Yeah, and the fact that you can remove the load area cover with one hand rather than having to wrestle it with four, as so often happens on cars, that kind of stuff. So really, as I say what you want about the outside and that it's not the prettiest thing in the world, but the inside is where it matters on that, and they've put a heck of a lot of time and effort into that.
There is actually quite a large amount of space in those back seats.
Mm.
And if you have a young family, it's definitely worth considering. It's competition now to, ironically, BMW's 1 Series, but the A-Class, I think.
There's more room in the back of that than there is well. in the 1 Series. Because
it's got a premium feel.
Yeah.
I think it's a great move for the brand of Mini, and we are all over the fact that it isn't the old little tiny Mini. Mini is the brand name now, and they are producing cars.
Mm.
With that... DNA in inverted commas in it.
Yeah.
Because it's still fun to drive and you are changing the gear. You are putting the clutch down. You are pressing the accelerator. It's none of it's heavy, but you are definitely doing it.
Yeah.
There's good solid feel to it. I was really surprised. And what I did like is they put the Speedo now right behind the steering wheel.
Yeah.
Instead of over in the middle area, which had that, which has their new iDrive infotainment system in there. And again, that great sat-nav directions in that. So I was really impressed. I was very surprised with that.
Would it be fair to say that it is the right shape of car for the windscreen family?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would love to have that for more time with my Sprogs.
Yeah.
And because I think with the clever touches it would work, because the back seats were almost the same width on the base as the front seats.
Mm-hmm.
On behind the passenger and the driver door seats, and the one in the middle is not that bad either.
No, it's relatively flat, which is great for folk like yourself who are putting Sprog seats in the back and stuff.
Yeah,
I did the cliched. Well, of course, I can sit behind myself with lots of knee room as well. I hopefully most people missed me doing that because I felt incredibly cheesy and silly as I was doing it.
Well, but that's unfair for me to do it because I'm not tall.
Well, I'm not blue. Yeah, we're about the same size, so it's I'm not ridiculous height either. Shall we move on to something that was a little bit different?
Yes.
And this was kind of one of the highlights of the day, and one of the things that they were very keen for us to drive. And that was, take a deep breath, the BMW X5 xDrive 40e M Sport. I think I covered everything.
PHEV.
PHEV. Well, yes.
The FERV.
It's a FERV.
I'm calling them FERVs from now on.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sick of saying PHEV.
It's too many syllables. So BMW are classing this, bizarrely, as their first plug-in hybrid. The i3 and the i8 don't actually count, as they can travel further on their electric motors, and the way that they're set up, they're not, strictly speaking, a plug-in hybrid. It's got a 2-litre twin-scroll turbo petrol engine, putting out 245 brake, which is pretty impressive on its own. But there's a 113 brake electric motor in there as well, which, if you add it up and apply some clever mathematics, comes to about 313 brake horsepower SUV in there. Not 6.8 seconds. It can get up to, and that's very... And that's sort of very important, 85.6 miles per gallon around town, whilst also towing not at the same time as towing 2.7 tons. It can give you the 85.6 miles per gallon and 77 grams per kilometer, or you can tow up to 2.7 tons and it has the full xDrive drivetrain. So it's all, you know, you basically, you're getting just about everything in there for your £52,000 that it would cost you. This I would imagine is going to be a fantastic hit in Hampstead, in various areas of Surrey, all these kind of places where there's quite large vehicles, because you're carrying many children to and from school, to the tennis coach, to all these places, but you're never doing particularly long journeys. I think there was a... What was the number? I've just lost it now. Oh, I didn't make a note of it. But it's something like 80-odd percent of journeys done by X5s are under 19 miles.
Yeah. They did mention that.
They did mention that. So the...
So if you can make them run on electric, then... You know,
yeah,
that's it's going to be better for everyone. That is.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it. So there's a kind of 15 mile urban range, a realistic urban range on electric only. And when it's not in that, then that 2-litre petrol engine kicks in and kicks out absolutely silently. It really was. It was so smooth.
It was. I recorded my thoughts as I was driving along in it, and I could hardly hear anything of the engine or the road or any wind noise on the recording at all.
Yeah,
it was wonderful. If you want to waft somewhere,
mm-hmm.
this is definitely the car for you.
And I know it looks big on the outside. I made a TARDIS crack about it on Twitter. And I know it looks quite big on the outside. But inside, it's just massive. Really is. I mean, I'm not no sort of little skinny person. But I couldn't actually, because I was in full chauffeur mode of driving very gently and smoothly and just seeing how much electricity I could use. Then I sort of went to put my elbow on the passenger door sill, and I basically couldn't reach it. I was wearing a jacket and I still couldn't reach it. It's absolutely huge in there. But if you're doing mostly urban stuff, a few long journeys, that kind of things, you know, you're taking little Horace and Arabella off to go skiing in France in the winter and all these kind of things. So obviously you need a four-wheel drive. Then absolutely the car for you. If you do more and more longer journeys, you might be better off with the xDrive 40D, which is the twin turbo diesel engine version. Mm-hmm. But if you're urban based or even semi-urban based, it's actually cheaper to buy than the 40D. And that's the thing. The 40D has a fine diesel engine in there, but the plug-in hybrid version is cheaper to tax, I've forgotten what I was going to say. Cheap to buy, in there as well. So you'd have to have a pretty good reason not to buy the plug-in hybrid version, I think.
Yeah, yeah,
really, yeah. Again, lovely vehicle. Don't know that it would be for me right at the minute, anyway. But yes, absolutely, and it handled well and smoothly, and all the things that you'd need in town, despite being the M Sport.
Yeah. On a slightly geeky note. I haven't found out, but I want to know what the material was on the steering wheel, because that felt lovely.
That was just brand new leather, mate.
Oh, it was great. It was the optional. You normally drive a very tatty old car.
It was the optional M Sport steering wheel. So it was new, shiny, fancy, great leather.
It was very tactile.
Plus,
it was like it was satin finished.
Yes, yes, it was.
It wasn't matte, it wasn't gloss, it was just in between, it was lovely.
Oh, hang on, sorry, I'm just scrolling through the spec sheet here. I'm sure it was an optional one. Yeah, it had the optional M steering wheel, which came as part of the pack.
Well, now I've been spoiled. Now I touch any other steering wheels.
Pardon me, I think it was the Mini JCW that had the optional super expensive steering wheel. But yeah, that's a car with only a couple hundred miles on it. It was lovely, just the right side. Yeah, liked it a lot.
Yes.
So, should we take a little break about talking about cars? What we drove, and they cunningly timed the presentation for just before lunch.
Yes,
to make sure everyone was back in time for it and had good reason for it. But. Yeah, I mean, we'd talk through a number of things. First of all, BMW last year in the UK sold 231,000 cars. What interested me out of that is that the bestseller was the 116D, so a car that we probably barely notice on the roads. Mm. It is mostly invisible, and I guess that's a pretty good fleet seller. But what amazed me was that the best-selling range in total was the four-door five series. Apologies for my mistake in my own notes here. It was the four-door five series, which, again, was a surprise, because I would have expected it to have been the four-door three series.
Yeah.
In there. But, yeah, it's quite a lot of cars, really. Quite a lot of cars.
Yeah, they've done well there. I think they were talking about in 10 years they've gone from 100,000 cars.
Yes, they have.
It was something like that. They've really rocketed.
For a long time, it was only 100,000 cars that BMW kind of aimed to sell in the UK, but that's gone soaring up. Absolutely soaring up. One of the other things they were telling us about, and I'm working up to the highlights here, really, was the new 7 Series, which unfortunately neither of us managed to get a shotty of.
No,
they were hugely popular, and I was desperate to have a shot because my father keeps threatening that it's going to be his next car, and I wanted to have driven one before him. But goodness me, if We were joking at the end of the last episode about cars and technology being almost the same, but when it comes to the new 7 Series, that really is the case. Just ridiculous. I mean,
staggering amount of tech.
I've got a list here, and I don't even know where to start to keep this at a reasonable length. The welcome lighting and all that kind of thing, it goes 4 meters down the side and is provided by an array of LEDs under the car. The executive lounge package in the long wheelbase ones comes with its own 7-inch tablet with which you can control all sorts of bits and pieces. There's an ionizer in the air conditioning system. I was just about falling off my stool by this point.
Yeah.
And you can buy different scents for it as well, so it's fragrance. And you can have up to 2 of 8 scents at a time. So you can have, you know, what's the one that was mentioned in the presentation? The aura for fresh spring grass. And these kind of things, which I don't know if I'd even notice it. They did make a point of saying that it was specially developed to not cling to your clothes. But I do wonder what the uptake of refills will be for that.
Mm.
I really do. There were some things which I mean, that's all a bit, we're laughing at it. It's really cool. And if you're in that market, that kind of stuff is important. But the things that really are actually going to come down to the cars that that most of us drive are, firstly, I think the remote parking.
That was amazing. We saw a film of it, but I actually witnessed it in the car park. Stunning bit of tech that you can control this from the key fob, the almost mouse size, computer mouse size key fob, that it will go back 1.5 of its own lengths, which is, it is slightly longer than the old one, the 7 Series.
19 mil, yeah.
And I thought it looks really nice. I think it's a very, very smart car. But back to the reversing. And it does 200 checks before it starts to move into a parking space. So you can go into, well, what will be just a normal parking space now with people parked close up to the edges of it. You get out, you shut your door, you give it the little switch and say, go on, park the car, please, and it'll drive it in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing watching that happen.
I'm sad I missed that. I can't remember what I was driving at the time, but I'm slightly disappointed that I actually missed that one, the demo of that. But it's 1.5 times its own length?
Yeah, it will go back forward 1.5 times.
Its own length. And just, it's the kind of thing that you can see coming as partly as cars get bigger, but also as we have to park more and more densely in spaces, then the more vehicles that have this kind of system that we can use, the better. We can park that a little bit closer. And it also means, you know, that, you know, people are going to take their car out before getting in, and rather than bashing into yours, which is, you know, having had quite a relatively large vehicle, you know, the Infiniti was a long and wide car. You're always slightly paranoid about people banging it and dinging it.
Yeah,
in car parks and stuff. The other thing which I thought was interesting and I think is something that is going to come to more vehicles and, you know, probably drop its way down the BMW range to start with, was the fact not just that this is BMW's first touchscreen, is in the 7 Series, but also gesture control. And I really wanted a shotty of this, and it's a shame I never got one. But yeah, the ability to, rather than actually having to even reach and touch a button, let alone squint at a touchscreen, to just kind of be able to wave your hand in the middle and wiggle your finger around to say, well, actually, I want this louder, I want this quieter, and to be able to do that. The ability to do that rather than have to fumble with controls.
Yeah.
Which that I think is going to be, along with the head-up display, I think is going to be a major safety benefit.
Yep.
Coming through. There were lots of other things in the 7 Series, adaptive modes for auto selection of sport, comfort, eco pro, all these kind of things.
That's what I really wanted to try out, was the car adapting to how you're driving it.
mm-hmm.
in terms of responses and the ride and all that sort of thing. Because I don't imagine that the ride will change massively from comfort and sport if you start to push on a little bit, say, instead of going over really bumpy roads slowly. But just I think that's that sounds a very interesting way for the tech to allow you to drive in all the conditions you're going to drive in.
Yes, I think so. I couldn't agree more. I would have liked to have tried it. Maybe some other time. Sure, there'll be another opportunity, but I think that would be a very interesting thing to drive, just to see how much of a difference it actually makes. Because I often poke these little buttons and find that there's not much difference between them. So yeah, I'd be interested to see if you could even tell. I guess the idea is that it's completely seamless and you can't tell in there, really.
Yeah.
So. Yep.
All right, moving on.
Yes. There was a lot of talk about connected drive, and I think that's something that you're probably going to cover in a different episode.
Yes.
But just the amount of connectivity that BMW are bringing to the range as a whole was quite huge. Everything from sending destinations to your car, which you can already kind of do with Google, to moving towards an app infrastructure where you can actually buy additional functionality for your car, not permanently. You can buy a subscription to, for example, a streaming music service for a couple of weeks whilst you're away on holiday.
Yeah, I thought that was a clever touch.
That was really clever.
I think that's an interesting way that perhaps other manufacturers will follow suit on, because I think that the short term, my car does so many different jobs, I need it to do this job now, and mm-hmm. allowing people to bolt on accessories in effect for that short period of time and then take them off and then use others is very clever. And
yeah,
I think they will benefit from that.
Yeah, absolutely. I like the fact that, you know, if you wanted to go, if you're away on holiday, you could buy the connected options for 2 weeks, cost you a tenner or something of that magnitude. To say, well, actually, for 2 weeks, I want to be able to get all the latest traffic news, because, you know, normally I don't need it because I'm just pottering around locally. But I'm off away to the south of France for 2 weeks. Give me the traffic news. Give me the music streaming with all the data that's included in the built-in SIM card in the car. And yeah, that's it. I can go down through France. I know that when I come back, it'll finish up and that'll be it.
Yeah.
Really, really nice way of marketing it and covering it in a way that I think would be pretty useful to folk. It's certainly the kind of thing that I like to play with.
Yep, but they also are partnering with Samsung, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Lots of the Samsung smart things. And I had a little bit of trouble working out why you would need to embed this into your car rather than into your phone, which you'll probably have with you anyway. But it's things like, okay, you're driving into the end of the street, pops up in the car and says, do you want to open your garage door? You hit the button on the steering wheel to just accept that, and it opens the garage door for you. So straight into your driveway, straight into the garage.
Yeah, another thing that was mentioned, not on the presentation, but when I was discussing it with the product manager, is he was saying that it'll obviously connect in with your sat nav. So if you suddenly get held up in traffic and you've set it up to do your cooker to have come on and start heating things up properly, it'll take that down and not burn your food.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can see how they're looking at integrating and trying to make everyone's lives easier, but I'm with you that I need to speak to the manufacturers more about, well, why don't I just use my phone?
Yeah.
It's clearly very clever what can be done in there. It was also with the smart thing, something I did think was clever was the alert.
Yes,
the alerts that come out from their from the Samsung Home Hub, because it's got automatic smoke and moisture detectors. So if there's smoke or a water leak, you'll start getting alarms and warnings about that. So then you can you can proactively check whether there is a problem, particularly if there's people home, although that was a little bit creepy that it can tell you who's home.
I think that there's, well, I used to have a system like that, which has since kind of become defunct. And I liked the security of it. I liked the idea of it. And then it suddenly dawned on me that if there was a smoke alarm or anything, what could I do about it? Did I really want to know whilst I was away? But that's a completely different, that's a completely different piece of psychology, really, that we're having to look at there.
Yeah. It's just, what information is enough?
Yeah. Absolutely.
But it was very, it's all incredibly clever, clearly.
I'd like to. I was very impressed by it. I don't know whether that stuff I would be as keen to lock into, but it's great that you can do it and that this stuff, that the idea of the connected home is up there for me with the idea of the connected car, because I actually like the idea. And it's interesting to see that now actually the home people and the car people are actually starting to talk together and talk about integration and to talk about some of the I can't think of the word, despite the fact it's one I use every day. The services that are required between the two of them. And some of my colleagues are going to absolutely slap me for the use of the term service in there. But never mind. These things happen.
But just before we move on, there was one thing that I thought was interesting. As we know, the EU and I think the US have demanded that there be an ability for a car to communicate with emergency services if they're in an accident. So this is one of the reasons why all cars are becoming connected.
Yeah.
The stuff is coming on the back of that, the services.
GM's OnStar has been doing it for a long, long time, and BMW has had the ability to do that for a long, long time. There's been SOS buttons in the car.
Yeah, but what I particularly found interesting in this instance was how we were told that if you have had an accident, it will also relay information like if you take the seatbelt off, if you open your door, if, you know, things like that, what happens after that event as well. And that information will be relayed because it will warn the emergency services, right, nobody's unbuckled, nobody's moved, okay, they could be unconscious, right, we're going prepared for that now. Or all the doors have opened, everybody seems to be out, okay, we're going prepared for that as well. And it's forewarning the emergency services with as much information as possible. I mean, I suppose the ultimate thing is they've got cameras, but we don't want that. A tinfoil hat really will come out at that point. But I think that's a good use of the technology, is to pass on vital information like that.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that was something that, again, it's good to know that kind of thing is coming as well, and is pretty much there. I think much of this is coming out and start to be available from the start of March. I think it's the 6th of March. That was the date for quite a lot of these things, which also ties in with, you know, the beginning of the Geneva Motor Show as well. So, so lots of stuff there. What else? Last up in this little bit, new Mini Convertible is coming. New Minis will be available with most of that connected tech that we've just been talking about as well. So they're not, absolutely not, the poor little brother or sister to the rest of the BMW range. That kind of tech, that kind of information coming right the way through.
Including the head-up display.
Including the head-up display, yeah. I'll talk about the head-up, my experience with the Mini head-up display in a little bit. But that, I think, was something that, if it was my car, I could have solved. What was I going to talk about? Oh, yeah, Mini Convertible. Again, launched on 6th of March, so it will obviously be out there at Geneva Show. They've made loads of improvements over the last two generations, basically. You now actually get some rear legroom, which is seen as a plus. Roll bars in the back are much neater, meaning you've got much, much better view at the back, as well as a rear view camera standard. It now actually has some boot volume as well, Nicholas was, yes, was keen to point out. But the coolest thing of the lot for me was the fact that there will be an optional fabric soft top, which actually has the Union Jack woven in to the hood fabric. It's such a popular option across the world on the top of Minis, that they thought, how on earth can we get this into the convertible? So they have actually, when they're weaving the fabric in the loom, it will actually put the Union Jack in. It looks great. It looks really good. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. Mini, again, 18% sales improvement on last year as well. But this was the first full year of that new sort of Mark III hatch as well.
And the five-door, wasn't it?
And the five-door coming on stream as well.
Yeah. Yes,
absolutely.
Yep.
And the last thing that they reminded us about, which I think is worth bearing in mind, is that it is the BMW Group centenary this year. So as of March, there should be all sorts of bits and pieces coming out. We've been told to look out for some concepts. We've been told to look out for some new models, these kind of things. So that is definitely something to keep an eye on, and something which I think is going to be pretty good. We have lots of events, that kind of thing.
Yep. Okay, Alan, moving on from the presentation information, back on to the cars we've driven.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I was a lucky little sod. I mean, you got to drive the car that was most that was the sort of Andrew car, really, in Clubman.
Yep,
and I mean that in a good way.
Yeah.
That was
the one I wanted. That was the one of the two I really wanted to drive.
Yeah.
So
and one of the ones I really wanted to drive was the Mini, no particular model name, hatch, John Cooper Works. Which it was very much an Alan car. I mean, it is a little powerful skateboard of a vehicle. You know, this is well, it's a Mini with a 2-liter turbo engine, 231 brake horsepower from this little mite of a car. 0 to 60 in 6.3 seconds for the manual that I drove, 6.1 for the automatic, actually. And just, oh, it was an absolute and total hoot. I mean, I made sure I took it on one of the longer routes. And boy, does this thing shift. It really does for really quite a small car. It goes like mad. And I just thought it was great. And it's even more surprising if you know me and you know what I've always had a bit of an allergy to any of the modern BMW Minis.
Okay? I was going to ask you about this. I was going to ask you, what did you think of Mini as the new Mini?
Yeah, because I learned to drive in my mum's Mini 30. So I learned to drive in a 998cc Isigonis Mini. Okay, and I've always been a bit snooty towards the new ones. And what amazed me most, because I'd been in a Mini 1 a while ago, and it was all right. But what amazed me most about this Mark III, especially when you're driving, is, you know, that it's a comfortable driving position with a sort of standard rake of steering wheel. Because those of you who know the originals know that the steering wheel is almost horizontal. It's a bit like piloting a Routemaster bus. But just the way, I think it was the vertical faraway windscreen and the steering wheel and just where it was and its relationship to the seat. It just really had the spirit of the original Mini. And I was so surprised by that. I was all ready to go, well, it's a fun little fast hatchback, but it's not a Mini. Only to find that actually it did feel like a Mini. And I mean, this one had the optional sports seats, the part leather sports seats and stuff. And goodness me, there's a lot of options you can throw at one of these Minis. Yes. I mean, the standard price for a John Cooper Works is about 23 grand. This one was over 30 by the time that they'd piled on the kit on it. And much of it I wouldn't necessarily have chosen, but was nice, you know. But goodness me, it actually felt like a Mini. And stuff, you know, I was expecting to be irked by the interior. And I was expecting it to be a bit my first geometry lesson. You know when you go on your first geometry lesson, you get given a pair of compasses and you start drawing circles. And you go, oh, here's a circle. And I can draw another circle off that circle and another one. And, oh, look at all these circles I can draw. And they're all circular. And I was expecting it to be like that. And I was expecting it to be a bit irritating and a bit contrived. And, okay, so it is a wee bit contrived. But it's a wee bit contrived in quite a nice way. And I really... And I actually quite liked it. And I'm shocked that I'm saying that. I'm genuinely shocked that I'm saying that, because I have been so negative about any of the newer minis. I think that the body kit and the different and sort of deeper, more scooped front valance on the Cooper Works makes a big difference to the looks. Yeah, it seems to make a big, big difference to looks. That and the fact that the grill somehow looks more cohesive. I still haven't quite worked out what it is. I've been back and I've looked at my photos and I've looked at my pictures. And we'll have all the pictures up in the blog section of the site as well. So we'll make sure you can see all the vehicles we're talking about. I think it's the red stripe at the bottom just somehow ties the grill together and sort of segregates the top part of the grill from the bottom part and stops it looking quite so gawping as maybe some of the lesser models do. But no, I really liked it. I mean, you wouldn't want to sit in the back seats. There's absolutely no legroom. So yeah, They're a convenient parcel area. And I think I'd do what Matt Farah said he did to his John Cooper Works, which is just take the back seats out. Because I'm not really certain how usable they are for people other than as a convenient bag rest. But I liked it, and I liked it a lot, and that really, really surprised me. There was one other thing that I got to the second roundabout, and actually I thought, you know, I'm going to quite like this car, even by the second roundabout. It was one of those. And the thing that got me...
only 200 yards from the gate.
I know. That was it. I got round the first roundabout. I thought, oh, this is quite nice. And then I went to change down for the second roundabout. Because the first roundabout from the gate, you start from first.
Yeah.
I went to change down for the second roundabout. And the manual gearbox rev matches. You are a hero at every roundabout. Okay? A driving god. Because every single time is a perfectly matched downshift, and I just can't do that. I try and try and try. Goodness knows I practice. But I can't do it, and I can't do it every single time. But this really flatters your driving, as well as being hilarious and having no body roll and all the other things that I like, and decent enough ride. You know, it's a bit jiggly, but it's a firmly suspended sports hatch. What do you expect? But no, that really won me over. That just me. If you can flatter me enough to make me look a hero as I approach every roundabout too fast and make two or three downshifts, you're in my good books. And the John Cooper Works certainly was. I liked it a lot. After the i8, it was my second favorite car of the day, definitely. And probably the one that, you know, if they said, well, you can take one home. You've got to use it every day, but you can take it home. That it would have been, would I have taken it over the i8? Tricky one. It would have been darn close. I'd have had to toss a coin, and I wouldn't have been upset with either choice. That's how good I felt it was.
I was interested to know what your feeling was about, because you have had your moments where you've expressed opinions that I thought, well, but if you get to drive one, I'm not so sure. I think you'll come round and come round to the positioning that Alex Goy has about.
Yes, that. I kind of have.
It's okay. They're a brand now, aren't they? They are. They're a brand, and they are building specific cars for specific sectors.
Yes.
So we, I mean, as I said, I was talking about the club, and we have to just drop the, oh, it's not like the original. No, it isn't, but it's not meant to be. But there is a connection to it, and there is a link to it, and there is an element of fun in these cars.
I was so impressed by the amount of spirit. The spirit was the important thing. I can live with the looks, I'll be on the inside. But I was amazed by the amount of spirit. And I think spirit's as important as anything else in a car.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really do. There was something else I was going to say. I can't remember what it was. Oh, whilst I love it, I'm not quite sure it's a lot of money.
To get it's a lot the of toys money. On top, isn't
you're on the, you know, to get it to, you know, by the time you've got some bomb toasting seats and some nav and stuff in there.
Yeah, I mean, it was the same for me with the Clubman.
Yeah. I mean, you're at the cost of a Focus RS, which is the new sliced bread.
Or the new MX-5.
Or the new MX-5, yes.
Yeah. But, it's a lot of money, but... I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad you did.
And yeah, it's a sports car. It's a sports car with lots of rear boot space.
And congratulations to Mini that they've built something that makes someone who was being a bit snooty about them, but when they experience it, they go, well, actually, fair dues.
Very snooty. I think
I'm trying to be kind to you.
I'm quite dumb. I am always prepared to have my opinions changed by example. And by argument, and to be honest, driving that was, I was dead pleased that I liked it. I wanted to like it, and I was dead pleased that I did.
Good. Should we move on?
Yes, let's. Should we move on to something that was a little bit more sedate?
Yes. The BMW X1 xDrive 25D X-Line. Hang on, have a lie down now. After.
I know. I mean, it's just as well they don't put all the badges on the back.
No.
They spread them around, and you never see this X-Line. But X-Line is the new... This is the absolute top-of-the-range X1 with a couple of bits and pieces added on. So it's the smallest of the BMW XUVs. SUVs, pardon me. X-Range of SUVs. That's where I was trying to go there. Again, 2 litre turbo diesel, 231 brake. So I was just checking. Sorry, I was just comparing up and down my notes here. Yeah, so the same output as the Mini, actually. But diesel. 8-speed auto gearbox.
Yep.
54 to 56 to the gallon, which is better than a kick in the teeth. The reason for the variance there, it depends on which wheels you choose. Because everything's an auto. 6.6 to 62 is pretty good.
It hustled us along, all right.
Yeah, I mean, we were on cruisy mode because it was the last thing we drove in the day.
Yeah.
And it was actually you and I both getting a chance to try a car at the same time. It was all right.
It was okay. I'm not... one thing that I did notice was the back seats were very low. Because I sat in them. I did the, oh, get in the back thing.
Yes, it was your turn to do it then.
Because I'd had a glance in the back seats, and I thought, oh, hang on, they're a bit low. So I had to sit in it just to get an idea. My shoulders were only just above the shoulder line of the back doors. I thought, you put kids in that, if you don't spec the interior right, that could be possibly quite an impressive area. And they can't get a view, so... Just thinking of, as I always do, I'm just thinking of lots of wiping is going to be required.
I think the outside of it, it's a pretty good looking vehicle. It's much pretty understated. It's better than the
Mark 1 was.
I think the looks have really come on now. Yeah. But the interior is a bit weird. The thing that surprised me was that, was when we got in actually, and it was the fact that it was a traditional PRND 321 type shifter in there for the auto box, rather than the joystick that all the other BMWs have. I don't know if those of you who are familiar with BMWs will know exactly what I'm talking about. But for quite a long time now, I'm counting back 3, 4, 5 series, so maybe 10, maybe 7, 8 years. Bit longer actually. Then in most BMWs you've got this little shifter which electronically controls the box, and you just kind of flip it forward for reverse and back for drive, really. And there's a big button on it for park. But this was, you know, this was Veycross style. Clunk, clunk, clunk. which just seems slightly out of place, just compared to everything else we'd driven. As this was the last thing we drove in the day, compared to everything else we'd driven, it just seemed a little bit unusual. It's a nice car. We had a little bit of debate between ourselves about why you'd have it over an xDrive 3 Series or a 2 Series Active Tourer xDrive.
Well, I know I'd have it over the 2 Series, but...
You'd have it over the 2 Series because it's not an MPV. Yes. And I think the reason you'd choose it over the 3 Series xDrive is if you're someone who does like to sit that little bit higher. I think that's basically where it fits in.
Yeah. How much was the one we drove?
$42,000.
Oh.
36 as standard. This is absolutely top of the line, though.
Yeah, I know. That's
top of the line, plus a pile of bits and pieces on top. I don't have the specs to hand, actually. I think they're here. Hang on. Pum, 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 pum. Open.
Yeah. I mean, it was obviously as lovely finished as you would expect.
I actually quite like the optional dark walnut trim that there was in it. Was it oak? It might have been dark oak trim in it, which was kind of matte finish wood.
Yeah, that was a nice little touch.
I quite liked it.
Yeah. And it had head-up display, didn't it?
It did.
Which I didn't know till I sat in the driver's seat. You're there talking about head-up display, and I thought, oh, we're just chatting about head-up display till I sat in the driver's seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's, So it was good. So I think head-up displays is standard in that one as well, at that spec. But no, I it was fine. It was good. It was decent. It's not an enthusiast vehicle, but I can see that there's plenty of market for it and plenty of people would like it.
Yeah,
It's cool. It was a good one.
All right, moving on then.
Moving on, yes. Well, we seem to have put all the small SUVs into one little zone here, don't we? Or have I just read the wrong? I've read the wrong thing, haven't I?
No,
I have. Oh, okay, that's good.
Now we're on to the Countryman.
Yes, we are. We're on to the Countryman. So, remember, I said I had a bit of a thing about some of the modern minis, and I went along. And I went along with an open mind, as hopefully has been proven by my views on the John Cooper Works. I felt kind of sorry for the poor old Countryman Special Edition that we tried. So, I mean, it was essentially a Countryman Cooper SD, all four, so the four-wheel drive one, 230, everything seems to be 231 brake, 231 brake, turbo diesel, automatic, but you can tell that compared to everything else we drove, you can tell that the Countryman has been around for a little while now. I actually meant to look up how long the model has been out for. The poor thing just felt, it just didn't feel as modern and as it didn't feel like everything else we drove.
No, I wish that I'd started with that.
Yeah, same here.
Rather than the Clubman. Because the Clubman is the fresh one right out the box.
Yeah.
It's got all the latest interior, it's got all the latest technology in it, apart from the four-wheel drive that will be coming out with that. But the least satisfying that I drove was mm-hmm. this Countryman, because it, as you said, it felt older. The interior and the sat-nav and all that sort of stuff was older.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't feel as good.
It didn't. It felt out of place amongst everything else that we drove, I think.
But if they can replicate the quality that was for everything on the inside of the Clubman
mm-hmm.
into the next generation of the Countryman, that's going to be great.
Yeah,
that is going to tick a lot of boxes for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Just having a quick check here. So the Countryman has been around since 2010. And received a facelift in 2014. So it's 6 years old, so it must be... I would be surprised if there wasn't a revision coming in the next couple of years.
They did hint that it was coming towards its end, didn't they?
They did. The folks did. Gosh, sorry, I'm...
The quality on the inside was what you would expect from a Mini. It was excellent quality. Mm-hmm. Some of the materials were, you know, of the last generation, so some of the plastics were a bit hard.
Yeah. I mean, it's a vehicle for which there's definitely a market. I mean, I think I've said before, I was at the Geneva Motor Show that the Countryman was launched at. I think it was one of the first ones I went to. And whilst I'm, you know, I looked at it and thought, I'm not really a fan, it was absolutely seething with target market, who really wanted the mini hatch, but had two kids and whatever else and just couldn't fit them in and out. And they were all, you know, trying the sprogs for size, all these kind of things, making sure the boot was big enough. And it was generating so much interest. You could look at it and say, not for me, but that is going to be a success. And it has been. It really has been for Mini. I mean, it was the first, am I right in saying it was the first model after the hatches?
I think so.
I think so. I can't be too far off. Yeah, maybe the original.
They had the
Clubman came first.
The three door. Then they went to the soft top. I can't remember whether they went to this or the Clubman first. But
no, me neither. But it was definitely the first move into that kind of area. And I can see that it's going to start. I think sales are going to start tailing off a little bit, especially with the new Clubman there. That's actually a little bit bigger, a little bit more spacious inside. And available with four-wheel drive. So, yeah. As I say, I feel slightly sorry for it.
That's an interesting point you bring up, actually. Is the biggest competition for this car now actually their own Clubman?
Yeah.
especially with the four-wheel drive.
I would say so, yes. It's a little bit like the whole it's a bit like the Apple model, isn't it? If you're going to have any competition, then make sure it's yourself.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is the iPod, the iPod classic to the new Clubman's iPod Touch, isn't it? Really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's still going to be a specialized market, but I can imagine that it's going to fade slightly into the background, at least until a new model comes along.
Yeah, well, we've got tons of them around, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Tons of these. They've shown that there is this market for different models in the range. So
yeah, and I'm also sure that if the Countryman didn't exist, then the new Clubman wouldn't either.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I think it's an evolution there. Which is good. Anyway, should we move on from that and actually look at one of the Countryman's other internal competition, not the Clubman, but the five door Mini One, which you drove.
I did, and I was very surprised by this actually, because I thought it was great fun.
This was the tiny engined one, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's only 102 horsepower petrol, but it made a cheeky little exhaust note. Now, I don't know whether that was synthesized or not. I didn't get a chance to ask them about that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great fun. Whereas I found the Clubman was a mature drive, this was... Like you say, there was a link to the old ones. Mm-hmm. It was you can chuck it round the corners and have a good hoot and a bit of a laugh, and it wanted to be driven on enthusiastically. You know, it wanted me to just go, come on, let's go and have fun, yay!
Which is exactly what you want in a small car.
Yeah, and that was, and it reminded me of the Mark One Mini that we had, mm-hmm. in that sense that it was. Brilliant. You just got in and you just put your foot down and you had great fun. And it wasn't necessarily the overall top speed. It was the being able to move at a higher speed than most people round corners and stuff.
Yeah. And that's the spirit thing that I was talking about earlier on as well. Yeah. That absolutely falls bang splat into the middle of that.
Yeah. And this, the interior was, as we would expect, all nice and lovely. it's what you say, were saying about the John Cooper Works. I mean, we didn't have the fancy sports seats or anything,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, this starts at, 14 and a half grand.
Yeah. And even the one that you were driving, was 16.2, and I can quite easily see how I could save 400 quid, 500 quid off that. straight away. So, you know, the standard Mini 1 hatch with the pepper pack on it brings you pretty much everything that you'd want, really. You know, it brings it. You get the sporty steering wheel. You get some alloys. You know, you get auto air conditioning and all these kind of things. Rain sensing wipers and headlamps. You know, and floor mats. What more could you possibly ask for? And that's yeah. I mean, you can leave the white indicator light. The white indicator lens is the anthracite roof lining and some of these bits. You know, chrome line exteriors and interiors. You know, and have a great week. Have a great week car that's completely affordable there.
Yeah, it was good fun.
Yeah,
it was. It's a good introduction to the brand of Mini. That.
Mm-hmm.
They've put it at a range. They put it at a price that people can, if they're in the market for a new car, they can afford to get into.
Yeah,
so it's good pricing. Enjoyed that a lot.
Uh-huh. And you were pretty surprised by that one. I was pretty surprised by it too. Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it to be as enthusiastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it encouraged you.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a. I was going to say hooligan's a bit wrong, the wrong word, but it's the naughty mate.
Cheeky.
Yeah, it's cheeky. That's it. That's a good one. Cheesy.
There like you that. Go. That's your Troy Queefism for the day.
Yeah,
then.
That's cliche done. Bang. Tick.
Work here is done.
Right, I think that covers all the cars.
I think so.
And
I
the
think-
information.
Yeah, I think just quickly, really, on behalf of both of us, just a quick thanks to the team at BMW and at Mini. Hopefully this won't sound too fawning. But to Gavin, to Andy, to Nicholas, and the rest of the team there for being just incredibly welcoming and just, you know, we were really quite nervous about it. Our first time at one of these things. But yeah. Thank you so much. It was an excellent day out, and I certainly learned a lot in a good way. And yeah.
Absolutely. I totally echo that.
In the meantime, though, between now and our next regular show, which should be coming up pretty soon, then Andrew, how should people get in touch with you?
The best way would be via Twitter, where I am at Cracked Windscreen. And how about you, Alan?
Same kind of thing. Twitter again, where it's at AJP Bradley. And naturally, of course, you can get in touch with both of us via the podcast Twitter, which is at Motoring Podcast. And of course, our website, which is motoringpodcast.com, which is the main focus for all of these, for all of our work. About the time that this podcast goes live, then I'll make sure that there are galleries up there of all the different cars that we drove, as many as possible, so that you can get an idea of just what it is that we've been talking about and put some pictures to our descriptions. In the meantime, of course, if you've enjoyed the show and you use a podcast app, then please give us a rating. That would be fantastic. Even better would be if you could give us a review, because reviews and ratings really, really affect where we sit on the on the top tens of podcasts. That's particularly useful to us. And of course, if you can tell anyone you know who you think would enjoy the show, then that would be appreciated as well. So I think that just about rounds it up. I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And until next time, safe motoring.